Hi, welcome to Sacred Conversations with Vision Battlesword. This is an audio series created by me and by the Sacred Light spiritual community for our own benefit as well as for anyone else that might be interested to hear it. This represents a new kind of podcast or a new type of audio series that I call a community conversation. So I'll be talking with the Sacred Light spiritual community and we'll explore all types of topics from truth to philosophy, spirituality, consciousness, psychedelics, and many, many more. And the goal of this is just to explore reality, to explore truth, and to see what all of the different pieces and all the different perspectives are of reality that we can put together into an integration of an entirely new philosophy. So I hope you'll join me for this journey, and without further ado, here's our episode. Thanks. How you feeling today, Mandarin Man?
I feel great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Good.
Happy to be here. I feel abundant. Productive. I look forward to this.
Nice. Who would you say that you are in this moment?
So many things. Author, investor, songwriter, friend, visions, entrepreneur, lover of fruit, and lover and user of language, which I think is very important. And there's just something about it that really intrigues me. And I've been on this kind of mysterious unfolding with the language. Of course, I get lost in it too, in just everyday life. And we use it left, right, you know, very casually. And I think there's a power to it that we're not fully embracing or utilizing. And I think it's been muddied at some point on the way. And either it's been intentionally muddied or just it. Duality is being expressed with it. And so it kind of has this dualistic, split-tongued, opposite meaning in so many of the words, which is mainly fascinating, but also frustrating sometimes.
That's a perfect intro. I like that you use the word muddied, because muddied is what happens when we mix something with water. And I know that is going to be a theme of what we talk about today.
Yes.
About the topic of language, which is, do you feel like that was the first thing that we really connected on as humans? Oh. that kind of we resonated with each other and saw something in each other that we wanted to explore in our relationship?
You know, I don't recall entirely. It's been a theme for a while.
It's always been a theme. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of our fun little hobbies, I think.
Yeah.
Exploring language, or as we like to call it in our little inside joke, the languish.
That's right.
I am Vision Battlesword, as you know. I'm the founder of Sacred Light, the creator of Intentional Autonomous Relating, and the host of Sacred Conversations. And my first question for you today about language is, in your little opening intro monologue there, you were saying I this and I that. And before we even get started, I just want to check in with you and say, who is speaking?
The soul.
Do you understand my question?
I believe so.
Okay.
The way I received that question is the soul that inhabits Eric Fry, aka Mandarin Man, at this moment, and what we believe to be 2024 that's who's speaking.
How do you separate that thing from language? How do you separate the I from the speak, the words?
I mean, can you?
That's my question.
Yeah. I've been told that people's personalities change when they speak different languages.
Mm.
I speak a little bit of Spanish, and I tend to believe, I mean, clearly my vocabulary is not as deep in Spanish as it is in English. And so there's a rudimentary or elementary kind of version of your personality, possibly, if you're not adept at one language versus another. But, you know, all languages, I forget who told me this, but it has an asymptotic relationship to truth. You know, the asymptote?
Sure.
Where the curve of the line always gets closer to the y-axis, but it never touches.
The classic exponential curve is an asymptote.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so whether speaking to yourself or speaking to another, that's in mathematics, like we try to get to the meaning of a word. Well, in mathematics, the mean is the average. And so what is the meaning? Well, we take his meaning and her meaning and his meaning, and we add those all together, and that's how we find meaning. And so you're always doing that to yourself. It's one thing. This really got me after I was kind of onto this. I can tell you where it's funny. You were involved. I don't know if it was that ayahuasca ceremony weekend, but this was definitely given to me in ceremony. You know, the mother said, "Eric, su lengua es una mentira." And I was like, what? I want to say, I didn't want to say, I said, que, but I did not think I said what. Su lengua es una mentira. Your language is a lie.
Mm.
And then it kind of said, pero no es la culpa de la gente. It's not the people's fault. Mm. Your language is a lie, but it's not the people's fault. And we can't get mad at, dare I say, imprisoned people, people captured by their language, if it's the only language they were ever taught. And so I got onto myself. It's like bad enough that we have to use this language between one another, but we also have to use this language internally to talk to ourselves.
Yeah, I'm really glad you mentioned that. That's kind of what I'm getting at. I love that phrase, people are imprisoned by their language. And I like to get the hard questions out of the way right off the bat, as you know, and that's why I like jump straight to who's talking to me right now? Who exactly is this that claims
we're figuring them
to
out.
Be speaking in language? But at any rate, sometimes we define a person. Or personality. Like when we're talking about ourself, we think of that as a narrative construct. Mm. We think of that as a story that something is telling all the time. Yeah. Our internal narrator, so to speak. We're sort of like a real-time storytelling machine that is self-creating out of language. We, meaning the personality.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another way of looking at being captured by language or being imprisoned by language. You know, it makes me think of meditation, which I know is a topic near and dear to your heart. We are trying to stop that internal monologue, that internal narrator, and thereby like liberate ourself from the prison of language that has somehow captured us.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Kierkegaard?
Sure.
You know, by naming it, you ruin it, I think he said. Something like that. Mm. Like, by trying to name God or name whatever we are, you've already limited it inherently just by trying to place some title on it. I mean, that's like metaphysics 101, you know? The artist in each of us craves to express, and most of us do that with the words we speak.
Well, I actually am kind of looking in this moment right now, I'm kind of looking at this thing that we do, this sacred conversations, as because what we're doing, what we do is we deconstruct language and try to figure out how the world works and how reality works through our language constructs primarily. It's almost like a thing trying to take itself apart
that's right.
to see how it works.
Yeah.
There's something really recursive and fractal and loopy about it.
Yes, which is, I love so much.
I know.
Like, it's trying to figure itself out. Mm-hmm. It's using itself to try to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we wouldn't be so intrigued by that idea if it weren't so confounding and confusing. Mm-hmm. And we don't actually appreciate how dualistic and confounding and confusing it is until you start breaking it apart, looking, you know, turning it over and looking at it at different angles.
Yeah, looking at it. I'm so glad you invoked that in that moment, because I was just thinking what we do with language to try to understand our own experience is like an eye without the benefit of a mirror. or any external reflection.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out what it looks like.
I mean, that's I say, it's right. That's the whole, it's so trippy.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, you do so much with phonetics and homophone.
Yes.
Rhyming or same or similar sounding words.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting.
Well, often when there are homophones, they're opposite meanings. A good example is peace, like at peace, or in a piece apart from the rest of a whole or other pieces. Whole, W-H-O-L-E is complete, or in a whole. I always think it's funny that the church misspells holy. It should have a W on it, right?
What is a hole? H-O-L-E.
A hole in the ground.
Yeah, I know. But what is it?
That's where we bury people. Like, it's, you know.
I know, but
hole.
But you can also, you can make a hole.
Displaced earth, like.
You can make a hole on a piece of paper. You can have a hole in your reasoning. You can have a hole in your head. You can have. Yeah. What's the same about all of those different situations?
It's gone. Something was there is now not there.
It's defined by something being missing. That is exactly the opposite of W-H-O-L-E.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
There's and where do you put holy in all of that? H-O-L-Y.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Well, what do you want to tell me about going back to your ayahuasca epiphany? And I think that this is kind of where it all starts. For you, that led to this whole unraveling or cascading awareness of what English is all about. Is that where you're headed with it?
Yes. And what I was thinking recently was, you know, England. It's funny. It's like with that prefix, ing is typically a suffix, right? Running, talking. And so England is the land of doing.
It's a thing that the ing suffix is a language. What do you call that? A phoneme or a diphthong? Or I'm not sure exactly.
Modifier.
But it's a thing that makes
there's,
a
then
verb.
We're back to ing again.
I know, right?
Yeah,
that's weird. It makes a verb into a present tense, present participle. I think
That's another thing that's so frustrating about this as well. I'm not a very good grammar student of grammar, but that is where this began. And I started seeing things like just noticing the dualistic double speak. I mean, I think a lot of people who are into this stuff start with spelling and cursive, right?
Spelling.
We cast spells, right?
Cursive.
Yeah. And we curse.
Spells and curses.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is new to me.
This is new to you? Oh, yeah. And so that's kind of interesting, if nothing else, but that with the idea that if there are curse words, like, so we can tag on that, like there are curse words and non-curse words. But I think a lot of people who are into the power of language, every word we speak is a curse word. Like we're manifesting with our words nonstop. And how intentionally we care to do that, you know, some people do it more than others, right? Some people are more into that idea than others, you know, but I think we're all doing it, whether we want to or not. And so that's why it could be frustrating if we speak a double-speak language, a slave's language, a dirty language that inhibits that manifestation power.
But it's not just the language that we speak, as we've established in this conversation. It is literally the stuff we're made of. It's our programming language.
It's the code that
of
describes
our operating
itself.
System.
Right.
Yeah.
And going back with the I, before I forget this, I think most of us want respect. And that word, it's been tested over and over. We respect it, right? We've looked at it. That's where inspection comes from, or your spectacles. But we respected it. We respect over and over and over. So respect, respect, respect. Have you, you know.
Seen again.
Again, again,
seen again.
Again. It has so much quality, we can't quite quit. We can't quit looking at it.
Huh.
And, you know, another one is release that I have not a problem with, but this interesting. It's like, oh, I release you every year. We're going to sign that lease again. We're going to release.
Your lease is up for renewal.
That's right. It's like, oh, I want to be released. And so there, it's just when we start looking at this, and I have more examples, a big block of this that we must talk about is the connection. So back to England. England had this huge navy. And there also seems to be this connection, as you mentioned, with water. And when we talked about how the language is muddied. An example, the one example of that is, you know, we're back to the I is connection to the sea, right? We S-E-E, the S-E-A, as we look out on the horizon to see what's coming. Don't you see the sea? And we travel around in a lot of seas, as in agency, interdependency, redundancy. And then how do we get with, in these words that are oceanic, sea like with ships, friendship, censorship, membership. And so there over and over, there tends to be this connection to water in the English language that I believe comes from the hundreds and hundreds of years that we were out on the high seas exploring the world. That's how, that is the legacy of the Great British nation. Sun never sets on Great Britain, right? Because they have so many colonies. That's a lot of fun to me to understand the nautical terms in our English language, because I think it gives us a clue to the history of this and where all this kind of came from. And then a big part of that is also with banking. So there's connection to the English language and water, and then the banking or monetary or currency system has a lot of this stuff in there, right? You have banks of a river. The bank is where we direct the cash flow of liquid assets. And so I think that's fun to examine and look at.
So English, in your opinion, English is a sailor's language.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's another homophone here, but the merchants and the sailing, that's why we have a sail. What are you selling? What are you sailing? What are your goods? And important, the most important thing is the port when you're out at sea. Hmm. That's why it's important. And so there's some of these things just explain what they are through like conjunctions, like you said, pitfall earlier, welcome. We hope you have a welcome, like you've come, and these words have just conjoined and they describe the thing that it is. That are just, those are just more fun, but they seem that the backstop of all this seems to be to have some kind of connection to water.
Mm-hmm.
And also it could be just water is life, right? Water is just so important. So of course the language is going to it's going to like be birthed from the thing that's most important on the planet, conceivably the water.
Yes and no, because there's different kinds of water.
Mm.
And you're really convincing me more so than I think ever before. We've had this conversation several times in different ways. You're convincing me now more than ever that English really is a seafaring people's language.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really seems very specific, mm-hmm. more so than people who live on the river or people who live by the lake or people who live by the well or the cenote or the oasis or any other kind of water, you know, source of water, which is a source of life that we would create settlement around or associate our civilization with. This really is about travel.
Mm-hmm.
This is about migration and mercantilism or trade and perhaps also warships.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Warship. Said warship. Yeah, that's a fun one.
Well, I'm just saying that, well, okay, so there's another association that I'm making.
That's militaristic.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that has to do with the point that you're making about banking and also, I think, law.
Yeah.
This idea, like, that our the language that we've been captured by seems to have something to do with the law of the high seas as compared to the law of the land in a way.
Right. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So it sounds like now you want to get into the admiralty law, maritime law.
I'm not saying I want to get into it. We're just exploring.
Yeah. Well, with the militaristic thing that I think is interesting is that the generals would meet in the tent. And so they would come in tents. What to express their ideas, their strategies, right? So that's where we get attention. That's an idea about attention. Your intention, we can call you to...
Well, we said we're either your intent or you can be at the tent.
Right.
Yeah. At tent, intent.
Yeah. Overarching, I think you're right. It's like militarist. It's like, you know, if you're going to explore the world, you're going to have to do that with boats. And for better or worse, there was a conquering or there was a financial incentive in all of this. And then also this kind of conquest.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly.
There's a questing element of it. It's all about questing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be conquest, but it can also be exploration. It can be trade and commerce.
Yeah.
But I'm starting to believe you. I'm starting to believe that you can, by analyzing a people's language in this way, you can get information about where those people came from, what their maybe traditional society was based on, and how they developed and how they evolved. Like, we don't have a language, as far as I can tell, that's got everything to do with desert stuff.
Right.
Desert stuff and oases sand and whatever.
That's a good point. But it's like, one, if we can zoom out as if we were aliens or some overseer and really examine it.
That's another question.
We can't have a quest without a question. You can get a clearer view of like, hey, well, they seem to like have these vibrations. Like if they heard it, it's just the vibration of what they're saying that are similar, that have all these meanings that they don't seem to maybe see, but exist.
Yeah.
Like coming into this earth through the birth canal or the birth channel. And then the birth of a ship is that you birth a ship, you release it into the water. And it also, I think, describes like the width of it, right? The birth of the bow.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. And then who delivers you? The doctor.
The doctor.
You go to the dock, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
It's all about ships.
It's all about ships. You know, another one that I like in religion is the God spell or the gospel.
Yeah.
Go tell the gospel. That's the God spell. And the word, and there's a lot of this in Christianity too, the word makes itself manifest. And that's what you're saying.
Manifest.
Yeah.
That's the list of goods on the ship.
That's right. The manifest. That's absolutely right. There you go. Good one.
Hmm. I'm catching on.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Great. So what about not? Another one is not.
Yeah.
You say, so-and-so coming to the party. No, they are not. N-O-T. That is a stoppage. Just like if you wanted to create a stoppage in a rope, you would tie a knot.
K-N-O-T.
K-N-O-T.
But then this whole thing has to do with knots. N-A-U-T.
Correct.
Because it's all nautical.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got not, not, and not.
The word's a knot in itself. And so
and the word is a knot.
The word, huh?
You're saying the word itself.
The word itself, the energy knot.
Yes.
It is a knot. Energetic. Because,
yes.
Yeah.
What do we do with this information?
Well, I think I'm figuring that out still, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like it's...
To be honest,
yes. I think, you know, another idea I had about this whole thing, and I really think it's just duality expressing itself. Like we can't, like earlier, you're like, there's different types of water. Yeah, there's fresh water and salt water. And that's water manifest in duality here. And there's always this male, female, hot, cold, the sun and the moon, just over and over and over. And so it could just be the language expressing itself through duality. And it's almost, and I've been told this when I've had this conversation with people who speak other languages, and they say it also exists in those languages too.
Really?
Yes.
The nautical stuff?
No, just the dualistic, yeah. Like
okay.
whole and peace and
right.
You know, we can get into some of the negative, more negative stuff, like, you know, we keep ashes in an urn, but you also earn a wage. What is your, someone might say, what is your undertaking? It's your job, but undertakers also want someone who takes out dead people, right?
This piece it's starting to really, you know how sometimes you look at a word for too long and it just starts to look really strange and it's like, it can't be the right spelling. That doesn't look right anymore. Huh. I'm starting to have that sense just from this concept of we're using the exact same sound to mean wildly different things.
Yeah. Why would we do that?
And also sometimes the exact same word, both the way it sounds and the way it's written or manifest visually.
Mm.
It's the same word meaning multiple different things, like undertaking.
Mm.
Yeah. That you just mentioned several of them.
Yeah.
Earn is.
I'm always looking for more though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm sure there's many, and they'll probably continue to pop up during our conversation. But I'm just starting to notice that as really strange. Like mm-hmm. this whole thing that you opened this whole topic on the concept of double speak,
mm.
and that we speak a double language, or we speak duplicitous code.
Yes.
That we're running, which is somehow a part of our way of being captured or restrained in power.
Yeah. This is your position, but what is someone's disposition? It seems like they would be different, but they're actually quite the same. And so the prefix D and dis is interesting in that way, because sometimes it undoes the thing, but sometimes it doesn't. And true, beautiful energy like light cannot be undone with delight. It's another thing that's good, because you can't, some energies are so pure, you can't undo them.
But isn't it interesting? Do you notice how you just used undo and do not to mean two different things?
Right.
What's up with that?
That's a funny one.
So
undo. Yeah. Do not. Hmm.
Where did we get this language, and how do we find our way back out of it?
Okay. So here's what I was thinking yesterday that I think will help people out. Those people being me and you. Okay. So, you know, you have the primary colors.
Yeah.
Red, green, and yellow, I believe.
Well, no.
No, but it's red, blue, and yellow.
That's right.
Okay. Those are the primary colors. With those colors, you can make the secondary colors.
Orange, green, and purple.
Orange, green, and purple. Thank you. Yeah. And so those original primary colors. And so let's say they did that. And so now we have six colors. But then we took away the original primary colors. You could still paint with those secondary colors and have a beautiful painting. But they've been mixed together in such a way that's limiting if you don't have the completeness of the six colors. That's kind of what I think is going on. That's a visual representation of something that's happening audibly.
So you're saying that, like, we've got a tinted palette in a way.
Yeah.
We can still create a complete and coherent picture of reality, but if we had access to those primary colors, we'd be able to see a different spectrum and realize that that's actually a lot closer to the
truth. And so that's what I think we're trying to do. That's mm-hmm. what I'm trying to do. Mm-hmm. And that's what people who say grand rising, mm-hmm. they know that. They don't want to, like, mourning is what we do when someone has died. They're spelt differently, but our brain doesn't hear them any differently. They're pronounced the same. And so it's the same vibration, even though it has different meanings. Why do we say hello?
I don't know.
Hell is not a good place. Hell we don't like.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we inhale when we breathe.
Mm-hmm. And yet, can I be, like, just real with you right now?
Yeah.
It's just the two of us. Nobody else is here listening. So can I just be totally transparent with you?
Yeah.
I do kind of find the whole idea of grand rising and heaven, yes, and these kind of things that sometimes we say in this community to be a little goofy and kind of lame.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Why are you experiencing sorrow right now?
Because I think they're fun.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially when people don't. The fun is not using them in community vision. The fun is using them to people at the coffee shop.
I see.
Grand rising.
What? Gotcha.
And then you get to look over and your partner slaps her head. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you on the whole idea, and I'm with, I'm with this concept of cleaning up our language. As you know, I'm like a champion of it, and becoming aware of the spells and curses
mm-hmm.
that we've been indoctrinated with and that we use on ourselves and each other all the time, unconsciously, and cleaning that up and reframing that, repatterning, reprogramming, all of that. I have a sense that there's something different than just doing kind of like a find and replace. I know that I'm probably sounding hypocritical right now because that's precisely what we do with the word work versus play.
Right.
And things like that.
Yep.
But sometimes it works for me and sometimes it doesn't. I don't know what that's about. I guess sometimes it just feels more contrived and less natural. Mm-hmm. That's what it is for me.
Well, when you've been speaking nothing but the slave's language for 40 years, it will seem unnatural.
Yeah.
You know.
Could we just say something like happy day or...
good day?
You know, good day. Good day. What's wrong with good day? Isn't that what we used to say?
Yeah, I mean, good day is good. The association between good and God is a lot of fun, too.
Oh.
You know, it's a God day.
Spells and curses. Okay, this one, I don't know why I never saw the curse in cursive before. That's wild. So a script, a handwritten script is a curse language. It's how we write curses.
Yeah, that one I don't know. You know what a grimoire is?
Yeah, it's a piece of furniture.
It's an armoire.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. No, it's a tome it's a book.
It's a book of spells.
Yeah.
The grimoire.
Yeah.
And that's where we get the word grammar. And so the grammar is a book of spells.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with the trivium?
What's that? No.
The trivium was the original liberal arts education. So we're talking about classical period, Greek and Roman, you know, approximately around the time of the birth of Christ, you know, maybe say 500 BC all the way through the Middle Ages.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually, first it was the trivium, which stands for the three roads.
Right.
And then it was also the quadrivium, which is the four roads. So those seven subjects collectively were considered a complete elite education. This would be like considered to be like going to college,
right?
Studying these seven courses, generally as a wealthy, privileged, you know, member of the upper class,
right?
Are the people who would actually receive an education. Mm-hmm. The trivium subjects were grammar, logic, and rhetoric.
Mm. Hmm.
And that, for a time, that was all that was considered needed. That was considered to be the complete education of an elite citizen, ready for life, ready to rule, actually.
Right, rule.
How to speak, how to think.
And what was rhetoric, you think?
Oh, I know what rhetoric is. Rhetoric is the art of the thing that we're doing right now.
Describing, yes. And I like, you know, rule. That made me think of like the idea of being rewarded or awarded. And the word, award is a subject. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you do something right, you get an award. You get award. Yeah. Very valuable. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of these are holdovers from, you know, minor is another one. Minor is a young person, but it's also someone who goes in a cave. Unfortunately, that's who we're going in caves, the miners.
Well, they're small enough to fit in all.
That's right. Yeah.
But you're talking about the grimoire and the grammar.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the words of Quintilian, to complete your trivium education means you have now become the good citizen speaking well.
And
this is considered to be, you know, the pinnacle of civilization, really, because you know the spells.
Right.
Mm. You know how to assemble them.
Right.
To
logic.
Yes. And then you know how to cast them.
Yes.
Through writing.
You have the complete catalog of them. That's the grammar.
It's magic. You've mastered the art magic in our language system.
Yeah. And I think I don't know a lot about Hebrew, but their language, the little I do know is that it communicates in different ways and it has multiple meanings, wherein the example I was told or that I know is like, if one is father, two is mother, three is child. And so when you add a father and a mother, you get a child. And so I don't know that English really has that in a similar way.
No, you're right. I think Hebrew is a very interesting language, and you're inspiring me to become more curious about it in the fact that it is both, it's phonetic, it's iconic, and numerological or numerical. That's fascinating. It seems very sophisticated in that way.
Right, yeah.
Mandarin Man, we're a little bit of the ways into this, and maybe I should have asked this question earlier, but I'm going to ask it now. What is language?
It's the vibration between two people. It's a way to feel. It's a way to alter the feelings of ourselves or others to get more information, to get our intent, or to simply enhance our experience. That's why we can be brought to tears with beautiful poetry or a song, which is even, you know, we haven't talked about tonal languages versus atonal languages. English is an atonal language versus Cantonese or Taiwanese. Many of the, not all of the Eastern languages are tonal languages. And so they'll have one word that will have three or four different tones or pitches or inflections that mean different things. There's a classic, I think it's Vietnamese, that cow is the same word for mother. And if you inflect it wrong, you can offend someone pretty badly. And so, you know, these words and these languages, they evoke feeling, and they're trying to, it's like a two-way kind of door. It's like they're driven by feeling. You get really angry. You say things that are harsh and mean and in a loud volume. And they're also meant to induce a feeling, if not simply an understanding, into another individual, right? And that's why conversation about language is so fun and so interesting, because you're turning the thing back on itself. You're trying to shoot the gun with the gun. You know, it's very challenging and fruitful.
But what about forms of language that don't take the form of at least auditory vibrations, like the written word, or just the word as it exists in your own subjective consciousness, thinking words?
Yeah, I've thought about that. You know, they say if you're trying to manifest something, you should write it down. I mean, there's speaking words, there's writing them down, and then there's recording them and hearing them back again later. And I think words that are written down, I think the reason that they say people recommend to write things down, you're trying to manifest this, because now they have another more conceivably permanent signature here in physical reality. And so they're a further layer down in a weird way. And I say a further layer down, that we have to, you know, to have that conversation, we have to get into like layers of reality and the mental layer, and then the, you know, emotional layer, and the causal layer, and the physical layer, which is what we're in. And so,
aren't we in all of those layers?
We're in all those layers. Yes. I would say, you know, you can look at it as down, top, you know, top down, but it's probably more likely like an in, out. And the physical layer is this crust where we reside that contains all those other layers in it that had to exist to be here in a physical space, in a physical game, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, well, I like where you're going with this, because that's kind of the same direction that I'm heading with it. Thinking about a word, let's just make it as simple as possible. We've got a language that consists of just one word.
One word.
But that word encapsulates something. It encapsulates some information. It encodes information. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what language is or what it does. But then that encoding can take many, many different forms. It can take the form of a script or an icon written in pencil on a piece of paper. It could be written in ink on my whiteboard. It could be typed on a computer screen. It can be stored on a hard drive. Mm-hmm. It can be stored as a typewritten set of letters in the pages of a book or on the screen of a digital book. And it can just exist purely in my own mind, in the electrochemical configurations and signatures of my particular brain state at that time. There could be a word that does not exist, never has, and never will in any other form than just in my own consciousness. So what the hell is that? Oh, and of course, as vibrations in the air, as you initially,
yeah,
you know, like initially defined it, but that's really only one. of many, many, many forms that language can take. Now, maybe that's the primary one. That's the one that evolved in our species, but maybe not. There's a book that's really important to me and was really influential on me called The Origin of Consciousness in the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind. And in that book, there's an archaeological analysis through the lens of psychology that posits the theory that language is not actually a manifestation of consciousness, but that consciousness is a manifestation of language. That language came first, and what? Then we woke up.
Interesting.
I know, it's a mind bender, but I've actually come to believe that.
Consciousness expressed through human beings, assuming that the trees and other things don't have consciousness.
Yeah, thank you for pressing me on the definition of that, because what this is talking about is specifically this narrative construct. The way that we defined personality earlier, the idea of this narrative construct, this ego state, this thing that we can shut off during meditation, this thing that talks to itself incessantly and believes that it is the whole person, that thing is actually an artifact of language. That we have a whole other consciousness, and all the other creatures on this planet
have
a whole other consciousness.
And then, in fact, whatever language we are using is cloaking that thing in a way.
Constructing it.
Yeah. And that's what I think we're all so desperate to be heard.
Cloaking the deeper consciousness.
Yes. It's kind of like the tip of the volcano that's bubbling out. But there's so much more under the crust of that volcano.
Yeah, or like tip of the iceberg kind
yeah,
of thing.
Right. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, some people are icebergs, some people are volcanoes.
But that's the prison. The language, the language-based narrative construct, that is the thing that is creating the prison. Or that is the prison.
Yeah. It's interesting that that word is so similar to prism.
Fascinating.
It's just a refraction. It's that soul essence being refracted, which, by the way, looks like a pure iceberg or a volcano, which is interesting too.
Mm-hmm. But all of this for me comes back to information theory, because that's the thing, that this idea of information, what is that? This ephemeral substance that, or not substance, this ephemeral phenomenon that somehow is mutable and fungible into all of these different material forms, and yet it's somehow still the same thing. You take that one word and the information that it represents, or that it encodes, and you know, it can be a collection of stones on the ground, and it can be a markings on a cave, and it can be all of these different things.
Well, that word, I think it's good to break that word down. Information.
Let's do it.
It's form.
Yep.
Right. Nation or Asian is a collective of, so it's an in form nation. And in means to manifest or to be or to, right, go inward.
I think you could break it down even further than that. Okay, so we've got in form, a, and then T-I-O-N. Because shun, we've talked about shun before.
We've talked about shun before.
So shun shows up a lot. I don't think it's nation. I think it's a shun. In form, a shun.
In form, a shun.
I don't know what that means, but I see those parts there.
Yeah, shun. Yeah.
Well, anyway, information, though, we have some idea of what that is. That's a hard one to define, but we have some idea that it's knowledge. It's concept. It's like thought.
Well, information. I can't believe we're just now getting to this, but I have a big problem with that.
Tell me more.
The K-N-O-W, to understand something, to know, is also the same way, it's the shortest negative we have. No, N-O. And that is one of those dualistic homophones that, I mean, it's such a crux of our language. No, I mean, we need no. We need that word. But for it also to represent an understanding seems unfortunate.
All right. Well, you dragged me into it. I wasn't necessarily trying to go down this rabbit hole right now, but you dragged me into it. It doesn't represent an understanding. Knowledge and understanding, I believe, are two quite very different things.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I believe that understanding is a word of subjugation. I believe that is.
Yeah. Well, I think when it's prompted, do you understand? It is. Jordan Maxwell mean anything to you? He talks a lot about this. He's passed on now, but he talked a lot about the maritime admiralty law and how that's why you go into court, right? Well, courts are where they play games, and you can't play the game unless you can pass the bar. When you pass the bar, now you're in the law of the seas and you're back into the high seas, and which is that's man's law. Versus the law of the land is God's law, natural law. And, you know, he talks about your car, when you buy a new car, they have an operator's manual. And so you are an operator of that vehicle. But if you are a driver of the vehicle, that is a legal term. And drivers, they're doing it for business activity. And that's why you need a driver's license and not an operator's license. And there's this whole, and because so now if you're driving, you're submitting to the roads, the rules of the road. You're going to go to the speed limit, yada, yada, use a blinker. And that's why you can get a ticket if you're a driver. And people get into, they'll fight this and say, I'm an operator. And you can evidently get out of those tickets. I think this is kind of getting in the lane with your friend who does the tax stuff. And, that's kind of in that realm. But, Jordan Maxwell said, understanding also is like if you're analyzing a building, you have to go up under in the basement and look at the, rafters or the studs or whatever to stand under it, to have an understanding of that physical structure.
That's real specific.
It's pretty specific. And I tend to agree with you that, okay. You're standing under my law or my authority.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
The concept itself. I'm standing under... I'm standing below, I'm standing in submission to whatever. It could be the concept, it could be you.
And so do you prefer inner standing?
I like stand with.
Stand with?
Yeah.
Okay.
I actually created a whole system.
Uh-oh. I like a system.
Oh, I know you do. Yeah, I created a whole set of alternatives to understanding that allows us to get much more nuanced and much more sophisticated about our relationship to knowledge, to information.
Okay.
So, for example, the way that we would informally throw around the word understand, I would say typically what we really mean is stand with. Mm. I stand with you as an equal in this knowledge, in this concept. If I believe what you say, If I'm receiving it, if I'm accepting it and internalizing it, and I support it, then I stand behind it.
Oh, I like that.
I stand behind you.
Right.
If I believe that I know what it is you're saying or what it is you're trying to communicate, but I'm not necessarily agreeing with it, I stand beside it.
Okay. Relationally, not as supportive as behind.
Yeah, I'm near. I'm nearby.
Okay. I'm standing beside you.
I'm not completely on my knees here. I'm standing.
Standing beside and standing behind I like the location description of how the word, we're kind of back to the here and the ear.
Yeah.
And the heard and the word.
Yeah.
And that's where this stuff becomes the juiciest to me, when there's this slippery, trickery in the language that seems to have where the spell collapses on itself. Mm. That's that's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the fun that we're having, is trying to figure out how to become intentional.
Yes.
With our language. We're trying to get in the tent with it.
And I think exposing these nefarious kind of vibrations with the healthy, hello, diagnosis, right? It's a gnosis of how you're going to die. Inhale, touching on those and then finding more positive versions of that, I think could be beneficial. Mm-hmm. Is it silly, grand rising? Possibly at first, but why do we have to eat a diet instead of a live it? It's, that's cheesy, but why don't we call it diet?
Why don't we just call it food? See, that's where I'm at. That's for me where sometimes where we do these reversals or these turnarounds, like I'm all in on play instead of work. I'm going down with the ship.
We should
on that
do
one.
Breath play.
Sure.
Instead of breath work.
I'm all on board with that one. But when we start getting into diet and then live it, it feels to me like an overcorrection. It feels like we did. How about it's like, so you're saying, can we reframe things from a negative to a positive? Yeah, sure. I think that's cool. And I think I'm also reflecting back. Can we just reframe things as true? Can we just reframe things as accurate?
As true.
Because I'm certainly not meaning to say that this is food that will make me die over and over again throughout my entire life. I'm certainly not meaning to cast that spell.
Mm-hmm.
But is there anything negative about food?
Food.
You know what I mean? It's just food.
Yeah.
It could just be food. It could just be clear. Our language could just be clear. It could just be descriptive. It could just be accurate. And that's kind of... And then we can decide, okay, what type of spell, now that I know my grammar, my logic, and my rhetoric, what type of spell am I actually trying to cast here right now?
Right.
And that's kind of where I'm going with the relationship of standing.
Right.
Now, maybe there are times when I actually do understand.
Well, here, we don't know what we don't know. And so there are words that we don't have. And I think that's why we use a lot of Sanskrit words to decide in the spiritual community to talk about things like sigmata, right? Or sigmati, rather. Sorry, excuse me.
You mean samadhi?
Samadhi. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
There's your Christian stuff coming through.
Yeah.
Stigmata
and
samadhi.
I was like, I said stigmata. Like, no, that's when you cry blood.
Yeah.
Let me try that again. You know, and so... My question is, how clear can we get with this English, this partial language, right? Childish is, you know, it's not even complete. I don't know that it's fully complete. And that's why, you know, when you shut up for a little while, you do start to feel better. Mm-hmm. You know, you go inward, you do a Vipassana, a 10-day silent retreat or whatever. You know, I think you start to feel better in even 10 minutes of silence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, silence is golden, they say. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what if... Going all the way back to the beginning, what you said, hey, I think we're, you said to me, Vision, I think we're speaking a slave's language here. I think this is a dirty language. I think we've been given a programming code that's intentionally limited and looping back on itself in all of these different double speak and double meaning ways, causing our spells to collapse.
You're right.
And you said all that to me. And so what if... That's right. And it feels like we're in some kind of a trap. It feels like we're in some kind of a prison.
We have weights on, I would say.
This language is somehow creating resistance in our lives or obstacles or it's slowing us down or cutting us off from possibilities. So what if that's true? What if at some point so long ago that we have actually forgotten because we've actually overwritten our old programming so completely that it's not currently accessible for the vast majority of us. What if we've actually been given a new program, master program, installed on our hardware?
I would love that.
In our consciousness that has been running us for how many countless generations?
Mm-hmm.
And we're only just now, the eyeball is only just now starting to catch a glimpse of itself.
That's right. Yeah. So where can we download it? I'm happy to install that new program.
I think we might have to write it ourselves.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, everyone wants property, right? And that's called a mortgage. Do you know what that word means?
It's got something to do with death.
That's right. Pledge. It's a death pledge.
Death pledge.
That the bank, that whoever, you know, it's a French word, of course, but So I think in order to get... I mean, that's a good question. Do you have to know exactly how lost you are before you try to start finding your way out? And I am still understanding the depth of which the thing is corrupt. And, you know, there's a lot of people you can't talk to this, you know, you can't, they think you're crazy. What, ships, oceans, seas, what the hell are you talking about? You know, and so, and... Yeah, I think we do it one word at a time. You know, I don't think we're going to go back to speaking Latin tomorrow or, you know, or another language that's pure. you know, but
why do you have reason to believe Latin is more pure?
No, I mean, it's just, you know, history and mystery is a lot of fun, right? Because it's his and miss, his is and misses. And so we have a miss story, or this mystery that we don't really know where it completely, and, you know, linguists will say, oh, well, it came, you know, stemmed from this and that. And that could be true, but I think it was Charlemagne who said the first thing he would do when he conquers someone is you change your language, because now they can't communicate in an effective way to rebel. So mm-hmm. you limit them, you put handcuffs on them mm-hmm. through the most important thing that they have, which is their word. I mean, that's a pretty tragic story with the native people in this country, right? They all, I mean, some of them, of course, speak Cherokee and Chickasaw and whatever still. But by and large, we made them speak English. You know, we took the children and put them in white schools, you know, or American schools, rather. And so, like, we know there's power. And that's a fun one, too. You can't have power without our. It's a collective power. It's a collective thing. And I think Malcolm X, I saw this in my notes, Malcolm X said, illness and wellness is the difference between I and we. Community, there's the unity in community. And so the thing is trying to help us. Like, from your point earlier, like, is this just consciousness thrusting itself out through language? Appears to be, because everything we do that's artful and beautiful, not everything, but a lot of things we do that are artful and beautiful come through language, come through word. Constitution was written in words, right? The Bible, the, you know, every poem, etc. And so that's maybe our soul or spirit wants, we like the dirty language because there's more of a challenge there. If there's no good or bad and it's all just earth school, yeah, give me the dirty one so I get to figure it out.
Maybe also it's a really, really subtle, sophisticated language where, kind of like what you're talking about with the tonal languages, take the exact same pronunciation but with a different inflection. And it becomes a completely different meaning, a completely different concept. Maybe the double meanings, the homophones and the same spelling, different concept, different context. Maybe all of that stuff actually reflects like a supreme subtlety.
Yeah.
And it has a lot more to do with like a, you know, like a really, really fine sword. You know, it's like how you wield it. You could right. pick it up and chop wood with it, but it's got so much more capability in the hands of someone that's masterful at that art of using the language. I have a sadness about the devolution of our language, like even just in my own lifetime. You know, I'm only 45. And you don't have to go back too much further than that. Go back to the 60s, the 50s, the first half of the 20th century. We've got recordings. And even before then, we've got lots and lots of written word. But you can go listen to a speech by John F. Kennedy. Go listen to any number of intellectuals, academics, artists, thinkers, philosophers, politicians from just go back 70 years, 80 years. It's a completely different language that we're speaking. Completely different. And much more sophisticated. It's hard to even imagine people talking that way now. With that level of intention, that level of construction, logic, oratory. These are things that we're losing decade by decade.
Oh, totally. And my first thought is that we went from a reading society to a viewing society when with the invention of the television. And so you're not using your brain as sharply. And then secondly, with this idea that consciousness is trying to push itself out, which all has a unique identity. You know, I think that's one of the most beautiful things of God is like it can replicate itself, but every time it's new and different for infinity. Right. And so this new consciousness, this collective consciousness wants its own identity. And so it wants its own language in a way. And so there's a lot of slang and a lot of
Slang.
Is slang a word?
Well, it's like the first part of language. But then you put an S.
Funny.
Remember the S?
Yeah.
The thing you just said about technology, I think, is really important. I think it's really important for a few different reasons. you're talking about how Charlemagne maybe said certainly pick any conqueror
there we
and
go.
They would have said this.
The first thing you do is
wreck their language. That's what you got to do. Make sure they can't communicate. Boy, does that make me think about censorship on the internet right now.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about a captured population and how language is used
not only
for control.
Are we going to make you speak a dirty language? We're not even going to let you use it entirely.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So there's that piece of the technology, and then there's the piece you talked about where it's probably making us dumber, just simply because by augmenting our mental capacity and extending it into these technological realms, it's just like anything. Like, imagine your physical body. What we're doing with technology, with screens and phones and computers and the internet and all this stuff, is to our mental body, our mental fitness, as if we were all climbing into a metal robot suit every day and not using our physical muscles to actually move
around.
Interesting. I
love that analogy. Yeah.
But just pushing buttons on a control.
Yeah.
And having it move around for us, what would happen to our bodies? They'd atrophy. You know, we'd become weaker and more frail and more brittle. Same thing. And so that brings me all the way back to Socrates. My favorite philosopher, I'd have to say. And Socrates and Plato, you do know that Plato was a pupil of Socrates and wrote everything that Socrates said.
Right.
And Socrates and Plato had a disagreement because this was a point in history where the written word, certainly writing was a well-established technology, but it certainly wasn't a wildly popular one. There were, you know, it was sort of a specialty thing. Not everything was written down. Many things were still conducted through oral tradition, and it was a little bit of a novelty. And Plato was really into writing. He really wanted to write all of these big ideas down and record them for history. And Socrates was against it because he didn't want anything to be, he said, we shouldn't be writing any of this down because we're making ourselves lazy. You know, if we do this generation after generation, then people are going to stop being able to use their memory.
Right.
Are going to stop being able to remember these things that we have to memorize now in order to become a learned and educated and intellectual person. And there's something really important about having to actually hold all of this information within your human consciousness from a perspective of making the connections and integrating the information and being able to then expand on the body of human knowledge. So funny to think of that. This argument going back 3,500 years about technology and how it's going to make us stupid.
The average American, anyhow, I can only speak for this country, seems to be at a deficit with just their, myself included, with their daily use of language and how, you know, the amount of words they have in their toolbox, their vocabulary. And just to play devil's advocate.
Why?
Well, I know he doesn't need it. Doing just fine. Like, I would like to think, I agree that if we had to remember everything, we didn't write things down. Naturally, there would be a hierarchical, like you wouldn't just remember things that aren't important or that are trivial, right? You would really cherish that brain space. But there's an argument to say, hey, if I can write this down, I don't have to use this computing power for that. And I can free it up to potentially for a more abstract thought. You know, now is that good or bad? I think it depends on, I think that
obviously both.
Yeah, I think it goes into you're using your left brain or your right brain. You know, we have two brains here we actually use. And, you know, another example is like a calculator. Like, no one knows how to do long division anymore. Why would you? You just punch it in the phone, you know.
Until there are no phones.
Yeah.
Until the power goes out.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh man, I wish I knew how to do some trigonometry right now.
Yeah. How many candles is 5 candles if I take away? Yeah.
It's obviously both. Sure. I completely agree with you. I mean, I think we do have a finite mental capacity. Mm. There's so much that you can simultaneously hold, you know, in your own yeah. internal information space. However, I believe that that capacity is far greater,
yeah.
thousands of times greater yeah. than whatever we think it is
yeah, I think,
today, because we don't actually stretch ourselves.
Yeah.
It's like we've been walking around in the robot suit since birth. Mm. We don't even know what the capabilities of our right. bodies are,
right.
mentally speaking. But for sure, every time we augment our human power, whether it's mental or physical, energetic, or in any other way, through technology, whether it's harnessing animal power to mm-hmm. plow our fields,
right.
whether it's using the written word to extend our memory into infinite capacity, whether it's everything that we've talked about, all the way up to computers and the internet today, of course, there's new achievements that we unlock that mm-hmm. we can now we can manifest, at least in terms of transformation of this material world, mm-hmm. in vastly, you know, ways that would be considered magical to people, even just 100, right. let alone 1,000 years ago. That all is true. And it is simultaneously true that neither you nor I, nor maybe anyone living today, could sit at the knees of Socrates.
Sure. Yeah.
From a standpoint of intellectual power mm. or prowess. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is a lot more. I think that there was a lot more of a different kind of intelligence that we used to have.
Yeah.
That we've outsourced to technology now.
Well, what the error in my thinking is that it seems like linear. It's like one for one. It's like, oh, well, if I don't have to memorize this, then I have this other space for whatever. But I think what you're arguing is that Socrates and those men and women back then, like, no. The having to remember it makes it exponential, because you have this new way of stacking more information in the same amount of space that, yeah, you're not using that muscle. And so you can never get gains, mental gains, as you would if you actually never wrote anything down. And, you know, and then and I guess the other way, I think an opportunity for us is, yeah, if we think the phones and television is ruining our minds, then yeah, get off it. And, you know, look, people who read, there's a direct correlation with, you know, obviously with intelligence and how much you read, and, you know, and so we still know that, but it seems that because of the last 80 years of popular culture, the majority of people, they're lacking in their acumen of language.
Yeah.
You know, it's unfortunate.
Yeah, what you're saying, I just want to bring it back around to Socrates and kind of tie a bow on this concept, because this is something that I have experienced in my own life, or that I have come to appreciate in my own life. And for me, I started to realize it in the computer field. And I think part of what Socrates is talking about, yes, I think there is a natural value to being able to remember things and to having recall of a large database of information just on tap in your own mind mm-hmm. and not having to go to an external source. But there's something much more important than that. And that has to do with the trade-off between generalization and specialization.
Yes, yes.
You see where I'm going with this?
I would love to talk about this. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what I noticed in the computer field is that sometimes there are, at least in the world that I worked in, there are some people who are more generalists, who know a lot of different subject areas and a lot of different domains. Mm-hmm. You know, let's say I know a little bit of programming, and I know a little bit about networking, and I know a little bit about storage and compute, and all of these different areas. And I may not go super deep mm-hmm. in any or all of these, but I know a lot of different things. And then there's other folks who are more specialists, and they go real super deep in one subject area. They have much less of an awareness and a knowledge base in any different area outside their field. And you could see this in any field. Mm-hmm. It's not just computers. Mm-hmm. And what I noticed in my career in managing teams is that there can be a phenomenon where a team of individual deep specialists can fail to come up with a solution to something, because they together do not create even the sum, let alone more than the sum mm-hmm. of their individual parts. There's no integration.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost, it's the blind man and the elephant.
Right. Yeah.
Scenario.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, I got a snake here. Well, I've got a tree.
Right.
I don't know. I've got, you know, I've got a rope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah.
And nobody can figure it out. But you bring in one generalist mm-hmm. that knows a little bit about all the different areas. Mm-hmm. And they say, oh yeah, you've got a bottleneck, in the network queue, between your storage stack and your compute layer.
Right. So do you know
that's what you got?
Do you know this terms with wicked and kind games?
Tell me more.
Okay. So I'm just finished this book called Range by David Epstein. And it's about exactly this and how people who have more range, they are better at wicked games that have all kinds of variability versus a kind game. And he opens a chapter one with the example of Tiger Woods versus Roger Federer. And Tiger Woods only played golf and he was a master at golf, but that is a kind game, right? Meaning that the goal is always the same, to hit this ball into this cup. There's different, you know, there's only three different types of courses, a par three, 4 or 5, right? I mean, there's wind, but in sand traps and that kind of stuff. But by and large, there's no opponent you're playing against, right? And so it's a very kind game versus tennis, which is less kind because now you have an opponent and everything they can come up with. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of specialization came along because we thought the world was a kind world, but it's not, you know, it's a wicked game in that there's all kinds of things that can happen at any moment to knock you off course and whatever you're trying, in whatever endeavor you're in.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a fragility to it.
Yeah.
Or an anti-resilience to it. Yeah. But of course, specialization also has its accelerators and its positives. You know, it's an amplifier in mm-hmm. certain ways, but it's not the end all be all. And I think that's where we really fall into the ultimate trap in terms of this idea of like a one direction of progress, a one direction of development. It's always heading toward more technology, more specialization, more division of labor. But coming back to the computer team analogy, what I noticed, which is I think also part of what Socrates was noticing or intuiting, is that there is sometimes no substitute from an integration perspective for a human mind. Meaning you can have 5 different people who each have the deepest level of mastery in these 5 different subjects and these 5 different domains, but they're also 5 different brains.
Mm-hmm.
And they are never going to be able to put their heads together into a configuration where they can share information and make the kind of connections between different perspectives or awarenesses or anything that can happen inside the human brain that can hold all 5 of those subjects simultaneously, even if it is to a much shallower level of depth. It's the integration.
Right.
It's the integration of awareness.
It's confusing our, there's this idea of chain of command, but there's also a chain of communication.
Mm-hmm.
And chain of command, they shouldn't be equal. Like if your chain of communication matches your chain of command, you're going to have holes. You're going to make errors because people different teams won't communicate with other teams that they should because they're, you know, that's their superior or they're not in that. Generally, those two arenas don't communicate to each other. And so you can visualize it from like a top down hierarchical kind of pyramid versus like circles where you have like the leader or director, general, whatever in the middle. And then all of these other teams, to use your computer coding analogy, surrounding them. And so that all that information can cross pollinate. And yeah, he said the example he used was mountain climbing. They did a study with mountain climbers and I think like 5,000 different what do you call it? Like expeditions, right? And the languages that had hierarchical, because these teams were from all over the world, right? And so the languages that were hierarchical in nature, this is great because we're getting back to language. They did have more successful summits, but they also had more casualties versus languages that were more cooperative. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a reason. I guess I should say something good about the English language. It is the predominant language, it seems. I mean, not that it's most spoken, but an example of this is like in the FAA, all the communications that pilots have with the tower are all in English, every country in the world.
Well, here's what's really funny about that. You could say that English is the lingua franca of the world.
That's a good one. That's right.
Because that used to be French. That's where that term comes from.
Yeah.
It used to be French.
Yeah. Wow.
That was considered to be the language of the international
right.
language
right.
or the language of diplomacy. Mm. Now it's English. Tells you who's running the show.
That's right.
England.
Yeah.
To be clear. Yeah.
The crown.
Yeah.
And well, that came about in, I think, the 50s or 60s. I don't remember, but there was a crash. There was one, I think it was Indonesian Air maybe, that had more crashes than any other airline. And when they started listening to the dialogue of the tapes between the pilot and the co-pilot, because the language was structured, it was difficult for a younger person to address an elder. There weren't avenues for, because it was viewed as dissent or disrespectful. And so a co-pilot wouldn't communicate or had an inability to communicate to a pilot about an issue because of the way the language was structured. Mm. Now, you could argue, and once they realized that, they said, okay, well, everyone's going to speak English. It doesn't have this kind of, keep saying hierarchy, but, you know, this respect built into the code, if you want to call it that, that some of these other older languages did, which I actually think is quite beautiful, that in some of the tonal Eastern languages, they have this elder, this respect built in. I think by and large, the narrative is that English is a agglomeration or amalgamation of a bunch of different languages that through time have kind of persisted for whatever reason. Is that right?
It seems to me that English is a language that was spoken in Northern Europe and by people who crossed the English Channel and then settled the British Isles, who were then later subsequently conquered over and over and over again by people who spoke different languages. Mm. And that is how the language became a slave language and got corrupted with all kinds of weird grammar and double meanings. That's my guess. Mm. That's my guess.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. So, yeah, and I don't really know where I fall in that debate, but we have to use it, you know?
Mm. So, do we?
I mean, I think you got to use something. I would hate to not use it.
There's lots of languages in the world.
That's true.
We could all learn Esperanto.
Which one?
Esperanto.
What's that?
Esperanto is a language that was created intentionally in the early 20th century, which was meant to be the global language.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't heard of this.
So this is all kind of part of, I think I'm getting the history or at least the time frame correct. Some between World War I and World War II, there was this big movement. The League of Nations was created and there was this big movement to never again. We'll never have a war like this again. This is the war to end all wars. We'll create a world council of all of the nations' governments and we'll institute peace through negotiation, communication, settling our differences politically and so forth. Mm-hmm. And as kind of part of that overall like utopian global peace movement, there was an idea that, okay, if we could all just talk to each other, that would help.
Yeah.
And so what if we actually put together a team of the world's greatest linguists, language experts, to sit down and devise a new language from scratch. So it's not something that's a slave language. It's not something that's been corrupted over time. It didn't just evolve organically with all the weird quirks and mutations of grammar and inconsistencies and irregularities,
right.
we're going to make it perfect. It's going to be a perfect language from start. And so they did. They made a language that sort of blends together, you know, many of the different, you know, different language kind of types from around the world, but that creates a very regular, very simple. It was designed to be the easiest, the quickest possible language to learn and to be able to get communicating quickly. So the idea would be everyone would have their national language or their cultural language, but then you'd always learn this Esperanto as your second language so that anywhere you go in the world, you can talk to the people.
Do you think in another timeline, we're having this conversation in Esperanto?
I mean, I think we're having this conversation in Esperanto right now.
So why did it, was this also when the metric system was kind of created? And
no, that is a whole different wild and crazy story that goes back to the French Revolution.
Oh, okay.
And I would love to have that conversation with you sometime.
Let's do it.
Yeah, we could have a conversation that's called Revolutions.
Oh.
That would be a lot of fun.
Yes.
But the French Revolution is a wild, wild story.
You know, I like that you touch on that word because that's the way I feel as I fight this fight.
Yeah.
It's in that spirit. Like, hey, we're breaking out of this.
Yeah.
Because the war, the great war of our people, of the age, is what? Is it the war? Is it the technology war? Is it the elite? And is it that simple as it's kind of always been?
Is it a spiritual war?
Is it a spiritual war? I definitely think that's going on. It's always going on. You know, that's the cost of rent down here. Spiritual war. Yeah, and so I kind of have these. It's a you know, revolution and revelation, very similar vibrations.
I love that
for good reason, I think. And so I hope that if it's not Esperanto, like I think my wish is that if I could speak to myself in a purer, more authentic, more in generative and nicer way. I would have a better earth experience and then help everyone else that, you know, around me just by that, by function of that, you know. But it feels rebellious in a way to even question it.
Yeah.
Kind of feels rebellious.
You're right.
And I think that's why it kind of lights me up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I think, first of all, I do think there are other languages that are available. Also, you talked about how there's a correlation between intelligence and, you know, how much you read or how much a person reads. Mm. And seems to me it probably does something good for your mind, your mental muscles to have multiple languages at your master,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, sure. And my Spanish is pretty poor, but it's sufficient, you know, and I do really, like I remember the first time when I was living in Guatemala, you know, I stayed down there for about 4 years and I had this house and I had this guy over and I was telling him, yeah, you know, necesitamos cambiar las chapas y después necesitamos pintura la cocina. And I just like realized, it's like, man, I've been speaking Spanish for like 20 minutes. Like, and it was like a really beautiful kind of moment because I didn't think, you know, I had taken some formal lessons, but I did like two, you know, about 3 weeks and then kind of quit. And I was living in a town where there were tons of expats. And so he spoke, by and large, you spoke English most of the day. And I think something that was interesting about that, that was a piece of advice that was given to me when I first moved down there. He's like, when you meet someone new and you both speak Spanish and English, that first conversation is very important because every conversation subsequent to that will be in that same language.
Mm.
And of course, you generally would suss out, you have a few sentences. I mean, of course, if they're Guatemalan, their Spanish is going to be better. And if you're an expat, your native language is going to be better, which most people, even if they weren't Americans or British or Australians, spoke English, you know, the French and the Dutch, et cetera, that were down there. And so you would kind of suss out which was better. And it was a kind of a courtesy that you would switch to that, unless the person said, no, I'm really trying to learn. I want to speak Spanish. And he was, oh, okay. But at a point, it's funny how, you know, back to water, two people speaking a language that one is not very adept at, that water doesn't flow. that language doesn't flow. And there's a desire to have that flow more easily. And so, hey, let's switch to this other language.
So there seems to me there's a value potentially in having more than one programming language at your disposal. Mm-hmm. Then it seems to me that we can continue to do exactly what it is that we're doing, which is clean up this dirty, dirty language.
Yeah.
Clean it up.
It's funny. Disposal. You might need a disposal to clean it up.
Maybe there's nothing wrong with it. Maybe it's a perfectly good language. It's just filthy.
Okay.
And we can fix that.
Yes. And I don't think it's one that there's a, how do I say this? It's just so meta. It doesn't lean itself or lend itself to creativity, in that I think it's rare that we make up new words. And I think that is more common in a Spanish or a German.
You think new words are being created more frequently in other languages?
Yeah, I do. You know, German, I think, is a good example. And we do it in English where there's two things that you just smash them together.
Yeah.
Like the house of the drinks is like the drink house, right? You know.
On the other hand, we have probably 1,000 different words for that place. Bar, pub, tavern.
Sure. Yeah.
On and on.
Yeah.
It's like our version of snow.
Right. Yeah. The Eskimos. Yeah, we haven't talked about that. That's
how many words do we have for the place where you get the drinks?
Yeah, a lot.
I think I've heard or read somewhere that English has the largest vocabulary of any language. Mm. That's one of the things that makes it so difficult to learn.
Right.
In particular.
Right. Well, yeah, and it doesn't make sense. I mean, that's another reason it makes it difficult to learn, because it's
chaotic. Yeah.
It's chaotic. I do want to look at my notes here just so, you know, to get some of these things that are maybe chaotic.
While you're doing that, I just had one. The third point I wanted to make is that there's a book called Stranger in a Strange Land by Robert Heinlein, which has a big theme about language in it. There's an idea of a Martian language, like the intelligent beings, the inhabitants of the planet Mars. And it turns out in the framing of this story that if you learn the Martian language, then you can think like a Martian. Mm. And just in being able to rewrite your thought processes around their conception and their structure of reality, human beings then suddenly gain.
Yes. I love
powers.
This. That's right.
You know, essentially powers to control, to manifest. Create, destroy, move, matter, teleportation, physical mastery, you know, of your own biological processes, all this different stuff, just by mastering a different language, which inherently reprograms or rewrites your mental equipment in that way.
Mm.
So I think that's also available.
Yeah, that resonates. You know, that's a fun kind of something else that came up with me in ayahuasca ceremony was a song that I don't know it. And I don't know, I think it's Quechua, like a language I don't obviously don't speak. And it was like, I don't want to know the meaning. I don't want to know what this means because it's so perfect. Like just the sounds that I'm hearing, like it deludes it if you know the meaning. Because you have all the weight of all of those words attached to it. And you can't just enjoy it. You can't allow it to call you to the present moment as easily because of the yeslage or knowledge of those words. Right? Because you get lost in those meanings. Versus listening to a song. Like I have a friend, he loves listening to French rap. You know, whatever, you know. And he's like, I just love it. And I'm like, why? He's like, I don't know. I just love it. And I think there's something really juicy in that. Like that you can kind of, even though you don't speak that language and you don't know the meanings of that word, the vibrations are still getting through. It's like, because there are people in the world, perceived, you know, French people that know the meanings of those words. You can tell you exactly what that song's about, but you don't. But you can still kind of perceive it through like an opaque kind of window somehow. Like a happy song sounds happy, a sad song sounds sad, you know. So there's something like listening to music and languages I don't speak and trying to interpret, like, what is this? How does this feel?
Just reading the feeling tone, the energy of it, just receiving the vibrations.
Right.
And making whatever meaning that those impressions are having on you. It's a different kind of presence.
It's much more enticing listening to a song in a language you don't understand than looking at text in a language you can't read. That's
true.
That has not, because the vibrations aren't behind it.
That's interesting.
You know, I mean, that seems obvious, but
there are vibrations, though. There are light vibrations that are hitting you, the back of your retina. It's a different vibration, and the wind just picked up and started blowing.
Spirit's here.
Spirit's like, here's the vibration. Mandarin Man, what is the last word?
The last word. Library is fun. It's where they lie and they bury things.
Well, I see a continuation of this conversation.
I'm happy.
I think you're right. We are just getting started. Yeah. Let's consider that to be the pregame. That's just the warm up.
The preface.
The preface, yes. Or the frontispiece.
Okay.
I love that. That's the last word I've decided.
Frontispiece. Okay. Love you, brother.
Love you too, man. Thanks for the conversation.
Anytime.
As always.
Thanks for joining me for this sacred conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And don't forget that the conversation can always continue. We can build on a topic that we've already talked about, and we can also start new topics and see how they all weave together. And that's just the exciting thing about this whole journey of exploration, is we don't know where it's going to go, but I'm really excited to find out with you. Please don't be shy to reach out and schedule your sacred conversation on whatever topic is interesting to you. Thanks a lot, and I look forward to talking with you soon.